Well, hello there. How y'all doing? It's been a minute. Many things have happened, and I didn't intend really to go on hiatus this long. I mean, I sort of knew when I was in London this summer working, that I wasn't gonna be posting regularly just because I wouldn't have the time to do regular interviews. That was just the nature of the job that I was working. And I got one episode up, I think like a week, maybe a week or two or so after I aired, and I had done a couple other interviews and then kept meaning to put them up and then just kept getting busier and busier. And then when the contract ended, I ended up in Edinburgh and then Sunderland, and I was getting ready to put stuff up in Sunderland when I found out that A, an interview was missing, and I don't know if it just didn't get recorded or whatever. And then my computer just completely died. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't turn it on. And so that took over a week to get repaired. And I got it back the day before I left Sunderland. So that was fun. And more on that part of my life in a minute. But the thing about getting my computer back is that they had to wipe everything. Now, I mean, this isn't really much of a problem, is that most of my writing and everything like that is backed up either on the cloud or on my external or in like a Google Drive or in an email somewhere. So, it's not like I'm okay with it being reset. I mean, I needed to delete so much stuff anyway. And this was just a cheap way out. But I did lose the intro to this podcast, I realized. So this episode won't have any music. I'm gonna try and find something and correct that over the next couple episodes, because I will have a couple coming out, one this week and one next week, and I apologize it's been so long, especially to the great, great people I interviewed. But I couldn't do anything about my computer just biting the dust. Anyway, I mentioned London, I mentioned Edinburgh, I mentioned Sunderland. I've been around. Some of you may recall that I left for the UK this summer to go sort of work at an English language summer camp for ESL teens, being an activity leader. And one day a week, I would get to sort of run drama classes and drama workshops. That went so well, in fact, that I was inspired and maybe told to look at taking a CELTA course, which is sort of a teacher training course to teach English as a second language, because I had a lot of fun doing the drama classes. The kids really, really enjoyed themselves. They were mostly Italian. I had, maybe some I think I had maybe a couple of Portuguese kids, but mostly Italian. And I had, I had one little boy said that he's gonna go back to Italy and join theater because of what I taught him. Anyway, I don't want to go on about that. Just that I am now looking to take this course, and originally I was gonna take it in September, and then that was full, so I'm now taking it in November. So after Sunderland, I went to Edinburgh for a bit just to see some friends, do some stuff at the Fringe Festival, got away to Dundee and Glasgow and Stirling, and I was staying with my friend in Sunderland, which is just sort of down the river, from Newcastle, if you will, because my course is going to be in Newcastle. But I didn't really know what to do between now and then, because the course doesn't start until the end of November, and everyone knows I love Scotland. So now I am recording from the Inner Hebrides on the west coast of Scotland, on the Isle of Cull, in my staff accommodation at the Cull Hotel. I went back to working in kitchens, this time at the hotel, and it's a lot calmer than I'm used to, which is nice. And being here has allowed me to kind of unplug a little, allowed me to sort of, detox my life a little bit. Everyone is lovely. The entire population of the island is about 190, 95, and the main settlement, which I'm in, Arnagar, as they would say, has a population of about 50. There are more sheep probably than people, and they like to give me some side eye. Anyway, that's a very brief history of my summer and why I haven't been uploading. My motivation came and, it comes and goes, but now that my life is calmer now, I am back, ready to do these things. So, let's talk about the show today, shall we? And it's actually a great, great show. My first guest will be the director, Jacqueline Castell, who directed the lovely horror film My Animal. And speaking of horror, my second guest is, I guess you could say, a bit of an icon in the horror and sort of genre worlds of filmmaking, and that is Lance Henriksen. Of course, people might know Lance best for the role of Bishop in the Alien franchise, and he was also Frank Black in Millennium and The X-Files. He has also appeared in Tarzan, was a voice in Call of Duty, Mass Effect, and he's also appeared in the Terminator and the cult classic Pumpkinhead, among many, many others. But as I mentioned, my first guest is Jacqueline Castell. She has worked a lot in music videos in the past, including with one of my favorite artists, Zola Jesus. and has written for artists such as John Carpenter, Jim Jarmusch, has collaborated with David Lynch and Stella McCartney. She recently directed her first feature film called My Animal, which stars Bobby Salvar Menwez, Amanda Stenberg, and the great, the glorious Stephen McHattie. It was released not too long ago, and here is my conversation with Jacqueline Castell.
Hey, how's it going? How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm doing all right.
Nice, nice. I'm all the way over in the UK, actually. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so cool. Awesome. What part of the UK?
I'm in Sunderland right now in the Northeast.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, just kind of over here for a little bit, doing some courses, doing some film stuff, you know.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, Jacqueline Castell, let's talk about My Animal. This is your feature directorial debut. How did this film, this project, come into your lap? I know it was written by the wonderful Jay Matthews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was it's funny, like, I mean, like, my background was, like, working a lot in, like, the music scene and music videos and things like that. And I had met Jay before previously, very briefly, at a Boy Harsher show and was a fan. But oddly enough, the screenplay came from my producer, Michael Solomon, in Canada. It had been passed to him via one of, like, Jay's close friends. And he was like, you know, I think you might be interested in this script. You should check it out. And when he sent it to me, I was like, oh, Jay wrote this. And I had, like, no idea that she did stuff in film. So it was a very funny moment of feeling like these two worlds in my life, like, combining in this unexpected way. So that was actually pretty cool that happened in the way that it did. And then, yeah, I read it and I really connected with the characters and the world. And I thought it was a really interesting premise. And then we met up in New York just to talk about it. And then from there, started working on the script together for about a year to get it kind of, like, to the right place and get it ready for production. So that was kind of the process of it from, like, the inception, from the beginning of it.
For you, and a lot of directors have done this before. For you, what was different, like, music videos, working with all these great artists, to being on set, being in charge of your own feature film?
Okay, sorry, you cut out for, like, a second. Can you just rephrase that one more time? I'm sorry about that.
No, I'm saying we see it a lot of time with film directors, but for you, what was the transition like from going with all these music videos that you do with these great artists to being on a film set, being in charge of, you know, a big budget feature film?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, I had gone to film school and I had done, like, a lot of short films. And then I kind of got interested in going in the music direction and doing music videos because I just love the opportunity to be able to very quickly explore ideas and try different things and try different techniques. And just, you know, just be able to have things that you can kind of rapid fire get out into the world and experiment with. So that was something I was really attracted to from a directing standpoint. So I think that when it went into, like, going into a feature film, I felt pretty prepared because I'd been on a lot of productions and a lot of shoots. It was just different from the perspective of, like, you're just on set for a longer period of time, you know, and there are different things that you have to kind of, you know, that you're working with. And obviously you're doing, you know, totally different work with your actors as opposed to musicians, but it didn't feel like it was some big shift. It was really more just getting accustomed to the longer time period that you're on set and just being able to kind of, like, handle all the, like, the pressures of that over a longer period of time.
There are queer themes in this film, and as a filmmaker, how important was it for you to cast queer actors in those queer roles?
I mean, that to me was something that, you know, I'm always really looking to, like, find actors that are going to connect to the material on a personal level as much as possible. And so that was something that I was specifically looking at when I was going through a casting process, because I was like, I feel like there's a certain kind of power when you bring any creative collaborator into the fore that can bring pieces of themselves to a work. I think that inherently like adds something to the DNA of a project that makes it more powerful and more compelling. And I think that's really important to bring that personal aspect to any production. And so so that was something that I was really looking for when I was casting. I was trying to find actors that were queer that would be really great for the roles. And so when I was doing the casting process, really just like, both Bobby and Amandla were my top picks, and I was like, I just feel like the two of them are really right for these roles. And I had again done lots of research on them, to be like, I feel pretty good that they would feel connected to these characters. And then it turned out much better than I had ever imagined that it could, because when I went out for both of them, having my first picks be the people that actually get cast, I think is pretty rare for your first film. So when I went out to Bobby just immediately clicked with the material and was like, I really, really connect with this. And this is so exciting because I don't get scripts like this that often. And so that was like kind of an immediate yes. But then when we had our first Zoom, it was during the pandemic. I asked, like, Bobby asked, who's going to be like Johnny? I'm dying to know who you're thinking of. And when I mentioned Amandla Stenberg, I was like, I really want to be Amandla. Bobby was just so overjoyed because they already knew each other from like the queer scene in New York and LA, which I didn't know. I didn't know that part, that they actually knew each other. And also Bobby said that they initially had like a little bit of a like flirtation at the beginning of their friendship. And so I was like, that's so perfect that I would, that you can kind of like psychically pick up on these things when you're doing your research. And so then I was like, okay, this is supposed to happen. And then they were just really excited to find an opportunity to work with each other and to be able to work with each other in the context of it being a queer love story. So it all worked out like so beautifully in a way that I never could have anticipated.
Another aspect of the film is lycanthropy, werewolf, and we see that a lot in, we've seen that a lot in horror films before. I think for me, Jack and Diane comes to mind. But for you, what makes that specific, I guess, trope such good horror film material?
Well, I mean, I think, well, I think in terms of like the genre lens, I mean, I'm really interested in and invested in stories about the outsider or like the horror of the outsider and using genre as a means to express that or express like how characters feel isolated within their own communities or what that quest for becoming an individual and like accepting all the parts of you that you are ashamed of or afraid of or fearful that other people will find out about. I feel like it just works really well in the context of like horror as a genre in general. And I think what's really interesting about the werewolf aspect or the lycanthropic aspect of the story was that, I think that there's a little bit more of a, like, as opposed to like vampire films where you see all these different types of executions of a vampire film, from something that's really gory to something that's art house. But I don't know if there's like at quite as much of that with like the werewolf genre. So I was really intrigued by having an opportunity to do something really different with it and to be like, okay, yes, it's a werewolf movie, but it's like not like any werewolf movie that you've seen before, which means that people are going to love it or they're going to hate it for that exact reason. But I love the idea of being able to play with that a little bit and play with people's expectations of what you can do with that specific subgenre of horror.
I was pleasantly surprised while watching it to see Scott Thompson pop up. I wouldn't
Oh, yeah.
know, which is interesting because lately I have noticed a lot of crossover between comedy and horror, or I think comedians do horror really, really well. Jordan Peele is a great example of that.
Yeah.
But how did this icon of Canadian comedy, Canadian television, come to be a part of this project?
Well, Scott was always on my list. I was like, I really feel like he would be so incredible for this role. And Honestly, like really early on, I was like, I love the character of Marcel. I think he's so like insane and interesting. And it's sad because there was an extra scene that took place at Johnny's house that we had to kind of like remove, but it kind of gave us a little bit more detail into Marcel's life. And I don't know, I thought it was really interesting to have this kind of, you know, like I said, like all I feel like all of the characters in this universe are outsiders just in different ways. And so I love this idea of like him being this like, you know, completely wild character in this small town, you know, and that like he and like Johnny have like an interesting relationship as well, and like what that conflict is, or what this idea of like, you know, like kind of being closeted means, or what it means to different generations, or the pressures that different generations felt with that. And it was really interesting talking to Scott. Like the first time we talked, we just had like a nice long phone call in Toronto, just talking through the character and talking through his own experiences, being like in the comedy world, but also like being gay and like how he was connecting to the role in that capacity. And so I just like it was really exciting talking to him because I'm a huge fan of his work and huge fan of Kids in the Hall. So I was like, yes. Like Scott wants to do the role. And then he was so like amazing on set and just so funny. And like I just had to like there are so many moments where I just had to like stop myself from bursting out loud during like a take, you know, because it was like it was so fun. So I love Scott Thompson. I'm so happy it was part of the movie.
Speaking of being big fans of things, I'm a really big fan of Zola Jesus, who I know you've worked with
Oh,
on
cool.
several occasions. And
Yeah.
when we were talking earlier about the transition between music videos and horror, she seems like kind of that perfect medium because a lot of her videos are kind of that darker, like Skin is a very trippy music video. I just wanted to ask about what it was like for you working with her and how you think being in her world might have prepared you a little bit for this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like, I mean, I think I'm always kind of interested in working with, I mean, working with artists that straddle a little bit of this, like, I don't know, like horror or darker kind of energy or something, right? Like, I feel like you're attracted to collaborating with certain types of people because you're just interested in some of the ideas that they're exploring. And so you find that mutual connection point. So I think that, I mean, what was really fun was be able to work with her and so on so many different projects and so many different music videos because we just got to explore a lot of different territory and try a lot of different things with like our with some of the ideas and structuring that around some of the broader like ideas within the records. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's prepared me in so many different ways, just in terms of like how you want to like from technical things for how you want to shoot something or edit something, but also just like I don't know the emotions that you want to convey and how you convey that through both the visuals and the audio, because audio is a huge component for me, and like the score is really important, the sound design is really important for me on film. So I think I'm always thinking that way, and I often like either write or prepare for projects listening to music quite a lot, because it helps me. It helps me like convey imagery in my head when I listen to things. So I often do that when I'm prepping projects.
I know you shot the film in Timmins, and we always see horror films kind of set in smaller towns, but I'm curious how filming in sort of a smaller town just helped enhance everything you were doing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. And I think why I'm attracted to smaller towns is because I grew up in a lot of really weird small towns and moved around a lot as a kid. And so I really connect with that sort of sense of isolation. And I, you know, when we were location scouting, I just really fell in love with Timmins because it was a character in and of itself, and it had a grit and a texture and a feeling to it. And I really wanted to be able to, like, when you, again, like, when you bring a group of people into that kind of environment and you're all just staying in a hotel and you're shooting this movie and you're isolated from the rest of the world, I think that that helps seep into the psychology of the production and seep into the actors and them feeling that same sense of claustrophobia that character would feel. So I really love when there's the opportunity to do that and to kind of have the reality of the production mirror the experiences of those characters. So that was something I really actually fought for, and everybody thought I was insane that we were going to shoot in Timmins, Ontario, but we knew we were going to shoot in Northern Ontario because of some of our financing. But I don't think anyone was prepared to go to Timmins and bring the first movie that was entirely shot in Timmins there. But as a result of that too, what was so great was that the people in the town were incredible. Like, they were so excited. It wasn't like a film town, where people have been burned and they don't really want production. They welcomed our team with open arms, and that was really meaningful to me too, because on indie budgets and productions, you really need the support of the local community. So that was really special.
And I, we mentioned Scott Thompson, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention another Canadian legend, especially in horror and genre, and of course the great, the incredible, the marvelous Stephen McHattie.
Oh yeah, he's
And
the
I mean, for for as someone who has this as their big sort of first film, what's it like having somebody who is so well known within the community be a part of your project to the degree that he was?
I mean, it was really exciting because, I mean, I think, like, I remember early on, I love character actors and I love genre actors so much. Like, I love villainous characters, and that's just like my jam. And so when I was thinking about Stephen McHattie, and we had started the formal approach to his team, and I remember at the time I found this like Reddit like thread that was like all about it was all about somebody who had like combed through Stephen McHattie's entire IMDb and was like, wouldn't it be crazy if he played a caring dad? Because it would be kind of off type from this idea of like him, like him always doing these more kind of villainous characters. And I was like, yes, that's exactly the thought process. Take a character actor and have them do something like different, or have them like have this softer edge to them. And what was really interesting is that when we were working on set together, especially at the very beginning, I kept having to kind of like be like, Steven, we gotta soften it a little bit. We gotta take it down a notch, because we want, like, because he's fantastic as this like caring dad, and so many people really love that angle of the story and like are really surprised by that. And so that was really fun, just seeing how you kind of like take this character that does have to have a dark side by virtue of the fact that he's a werewolf, but also have the humanity in him as well. And he captured that so beautifully.
There are so many great scenes in the film, whether it's the dialogue or the cinematography or the lighting. I'm curious for you, did you have a favorite scene that that happened while you were making the film?
Favorite scene. I mean, there's a couple of ones that I was really like really really excited about when we were like shooting them for different reasons, but I think a couple of them, I mean, I loved it when we shot the dream sequence. That was very fun. I love that moment, and I love obviously like the love scene. That was like a really like beautiful moment during production and felt really special. But I also really have a point of pride about the scene in the baseball field when they're doing donuts, because it was a scene that everyone told me was impossible and wasn't going to happen because the snow was so high, and we had to be constantly bulldozing snow for this film. And so I was told, it's not going to happen. You're going to have to rewrite the script. It's going to have to change. And I stuck to my guns on that one, and we had to switch fields. But we did ultimately end up shooting that scene, and it went off without a hitch. And so I have like a real, that was like this real high for me on set, because I was like, yeah, you guys told me I couldn't do it, I just did it. And so that's for a different reason, I guess. It was a personal point of pride with that particular shoot day. But yeah, I really loved when we did kind of all the like intimate moments on one day, and I love those scenes. I think because they were closed sets, and because I felt like there was just an intimacy, and there was like a different kind of vibe on the set there that I really liked. I like the less people that you have in a room when you're shooting a scene, the better. because when you have too many people, you have too much energy and it can be really distracting for actors. And so if I could just work with like me and my DP and, and the sound recordists, and that'd be the only people in the room, I would be like the happiest for that. But, obviously you need lots of people to make a movie, and that's great too. And I love what everybody contributes, but I always find that I find my footing when it's the quietest and when there can be the most focus for everybody. Those are the moments I really love.
Well, the film is My Animal, and it is in select theaters on September 8th and on digital on September the 15th. Jacqueline Castell, thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All righty, have a good one. Cheers.
I do. All right, bye.
And once again, that was my interview with film director Jacqueline Castell, and her debut feature, My Animal, was released on September the 8th. And again, I apologize. This interview was supposed to be out like 2.5 weeks ago, and then I had the issues with my computer. So I apologize to Jacqueline and the publicist Sam for the delay. But there you are. From horror, we sort of move into a family survivalist tale. Nevertheless, it stars a horror and genre icon in Lance Henriksen. As I mentioned, you may know him from the role of Bishop in the Alien film franchise, Frank Black in Millennium in the X-Files. He has also done many, many, many other things. He had a cameo appearance as the King in the 1993 version of the Super Mario Brothers film, a film ahead of its time, if I might add. He was a voice in Tarzan, and he has been in other films such as Hellraiser, When a Stranger Calls, Pumpkinhead, Jennifer's Body, Kids vs. Monsters, as well as the television series, The A-Team, NCIS, Castle, Witches of Oz, Legend of Korra, Hannibal, The Strain, The Blacklist, Grey's Anatomy, Criminal Minds, Legends of Tomorrow, and Rabbit Hole. He is, of course, Lance Henriksen. He co-stars in the new film On Fire with Peter Facinelli, Asser Angel, and Fiona Dourif, and the film is out on September 29th. Here is my conversation with Lance Henriksen.
Hey man,
Hey
how you
Lance.
doing?
Good, how you
How are
doing?
you?
I'm good, I'm good.
Well, were you in Vancouver when we were up there making Millennium? You remember that show?
Yes, I was probably living. That was about what, 5 or 6 years ago? How long ago was that?
Maybe even a little longer now.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I
but it
lived.
was Chris Carter. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I lived
I
in
think
Vancouver.
eight.
I lived in Vancouver till 2017. I have a lot of friends that worked on Millennium because I do some PA work and some like ADing as well. So I'm very connected to the industry.
Cool. That's
Yeah.
cool, man.
Yeah. How did you like filming in Vancouver?
I loved it. Yeah. It's very, at that time, the Chinese hadn't taken over the whole state of British Columbia. I mean, now you can't even see the harbor, you
Yeah.
know, all
Yeah.
the little buildings. People.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, I mean, I loved it up there. I really did.
Well, in a way, you mentioned BC, and it strikes me that On Fire is a little bit apt in a lot of ways, since a lot of BC is on fire and a lot of the world is on fire. As an actor, are you do you like projects that have a certain amount of relevancy or a certain amount of currency,
Oh,
as well?
sure. I'm not really a comedian. No, you know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
everything I get my hands on is really telling some kind of story that needs to be done. You know what I mean? Anyway, there was a time when Vancouver was a hot spot of really dangerous people up there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I don't know. I mean, my morality clause is only to tell the truth. That's it. No.
Yeah. Was there one particular thing about the character of George that resonated with you that made you want to tell the story, or was it more the overall script?
It was the overall script because when you think about the fires that are taking place all over the place, all over the north, wherever, what's happened is people have encroached on nature and nature is fighting back. Do you know what I mean? I mean
Yeah.
that you the fire is merciless. If you make a mistake and it will take you. It will take you. It's not a game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bit of a humorous moment where your character, comes out as being a bit skeptical that climate change is causing the fires, and how much of an effect that is. I think, I mean, obviously we know it's a factor, but I think, to what extent, I think is a conversation that people are having. But what would you say to people that, still don't like to, that maybe are on the other side of the argument, that like your character is, in terms of.
Yeah, I would not throw another human being away. I don't want to see them hurt. I don't want to see them burnt or killed. And it seems like right now everybody's got a cell phone in their hand, even walking down the street, and they're isolating again in another way. They're going to get so confused if something traumatic comes up that they won't be able to handle it. That's what I think. I mean, I worry about the speed that society is withdrawing. And if you withdraw and there's a fire, you're going to need help. I mean, that's the truth. You know?
Making a film like this, I'm curious, did you think about at all what you would do if you were faced with this situation in real life?
I have been. I got taught how to fight fires on ships, and it's live with flame, everything. And it was terrifying. If that got out of hand, that's terrifying. You wouldn't last a minute. You know, we're not built like an armadillo, you know.
It's funny, of all the ways to die, it feels like death by fire or being burned alive is probably the most excruciating.
I would imagine so. Yeah, I know. I know. Even most people in fires, they die of suffocation because the fire actually eats up all of the air, all the oxygen. You know, so it's like, yeah, it's a terrifying thing. And we did it. I'm glad it's behind us. I can't wait to see what the reaction is. because it's really about a family, you
Yeah,
know, I feel it.
absolutely. And speaking of the family, your son, your co-star is Peter Facinelli. He was also a producer and the co-director on this. What was it
Yeah.
like? It's always weird as an actor receiving directions from your scene partner. What was it like acting opposite someone who was also in charge of the set?
Yeah, I know. He's very talented. He's a very talented guy. And I was when he took over, I was very happy. Very, very happy. But
You
I'm again, I'm just one of, you know, one of many on that movie.
know, I being a family unit is also interesting because, you know, you may not meet your co-stars until the first day of filming, but how quickly do you think you and Asher and Peter and Fiona were able to form this family?
Immediately, because we all took a chance. We all took, on the first scene that we did, we all took chances about our performances, and it paid off because you have to be willing to accept it as well as give it, you know. I mean, it went very well. It really did. I was happy. I was happy to be there.
You know, this is sort of a horror thriller film, and you've had a long career in quote unquote genre cinema, you know, where whether it's horror or whether it's sci-fi, and
Yeah.
I know there's a very large you know fan base associated with those genres. I mean, how do you feel about sort of being this genre icon? Are you comfortable with that status? Is that something that you think about every now and then?
You know what? That's a little bit like asking me, how do I feel about being a man?
Fair.
Yes. I've moved into. I'm telling stories from my childhood. I mean, really, there. You know, I've seen a lot.
You know, society and filmmaking, you know, has changed so much, even in the last 10 years, you know, compared to 40 or 50 years ago. I'm curious how
Yeah.
much your perspective of, you know, the art of the craft has perhaps changed or morphed over the years, if at all.
I think it has. Of course it has. Because we have politicians and businessmen telling us that in 5 years we have to have all electric cars. What if I can't afford it? You know, I mean, they are controlling the game. And I think there's going to be a lot more frightening movies coming out about how that's done and why it's done. I have no power. I don't want any power. I don't want power over anyone else. I mean, we get married with the confidence that what we'll do is try to make each other happy. You know, I'm telling you, it's such a, I don't know much about the industry. All I know is I'm seeing people withdraw more and more and more. And I feel bad for them because I never even wanted a cell phone.
Right. All right. And just, you know, we talked about genre filmmaking, and it strikes me that horror in particular has a certain way of maybe not truth telling, but talking about ideas that we are uncomfortable about, but in a way that, you know, maybe we can relate to a little bit more. Why do you think horror is such a successful medium for getting sort of more complex ideas across.
Because we want to dramatize, take the chance of dramatizing a moment to look at it, to really see it. I don't mean people getting stabbed or shot, you know. I mean, I don't mean that. Horror is in the eye of the beholder. Some people could look at horror and feel nothing.
Right.
Other people, you know, I don't think we're doing horror so much as we're doing trauma. I
Yeah.
mean, it's trauma. And people should know what happens when you are traumatized, you know. It's like not bad.
You bring up an interesting point because it felt like for so long we weren't allowed to discuss trauma in depth. We kind of just had to, you know, we went through an
Endure
experience
it, yeah.
and we had to kind of sweep it
Yeah.
under the rug. And you know, now there's discussion about mental health. The industry has sort of mental health resources where we are allowed to talk about it more. How, just in terms of just a human being, how does talking about issues, whether they're traumatic or not, how does that help us maybe advance society in ways that we weren't able to 20, 30 years ago?
I think it does. I absolutely think it does. But there's two sides of the. We're always saying there's two sides to an argument. I mean, it's, well, of course, but we've been saying that for over 400 years or 500 years. You know, it's people, we don't catch on too quick. You know, we really don't, you know.
You know, out of there's some pretty intense scenes in this film. Was there one moment during filming that was a favorite of yours?
Yeah, anytime I engaged with the truth, I'm trying to tell the truth. And that's all I have left. I wrote a little thing in here where I said, I had to write something. Time has passed me on, and I'm frustrated, and I feel angry and void of all I have is uselessness. I love my family, and I would give my life for them, no matter what. And that's what I'm left with. You know, as you get to the back door of life, this character, he realizes it's almost over, dude.
Is there a truth as an actor, or does it depend on the story that you're telling?
It depends on the issues that script brings up, and then I'll fly with them. I mean, I'll go with it. I don't feel fear of much fear about it at all. You know, it's just,
You know, speaking of fear, are there things that still scare you, or are you know, just comfortable with whatever happens?
I am. Yeah. Because I don't get another shot. This day, this interview we're doing, I'm not going to get another one of these. It's happening now, and that's it. And if whether I feel afraid or good or what, doesn't matter. It's like we all try to find something to cling on to.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Don't they always tell actors, be in the present, just live in the present, because that's all there is?
Yeah, absolutely.
You
All
know,
right.
just before I wrap up here, this is such a you know, it is traumatic, but it is a very nuanced film in a lot of ways. For the audiences that will watch this, is there something that you want them to take away, whether it's a message or just a feeling?
Yeah, don't make promises you can't keep.
I like that.
Why? You know what I mean?
I like that.
That's a good one.
I like
Don't
that.
make promises you can't keep. And that leaves you free also. It doesn't mean if I don't do everything I say I want to do, does that make me a loser or make me not worthy of your love or whatever? You know, I mean, that's it. That's what it's about. We're evolving.
Yeah, we are.
Well, awesome. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Lance.
Thank you, sir.
Alrighty.
Have
Have a
a
good
great rest of your evening.
good rest of your day.
Thank you.
And once again, that was my conversation with the iconic Lance Henriksen. His new film, On Fire, will be released September the 29th. That does it for me. It feels good to be back. Feels a little bit strange to be recording again, especially with no music. As I mentioned, I'm starting basically from scratch. My Wi-Fi is not great here, but I'm gonna take a couple of days and get it all sorted out, and hopefully you all can be returned to the endeavors of old and also the endeavors of new, because as I mentioned, it's constantly morphing and constantly changing. I apologize that I've been away for so long. I'll try not to stay away too long this time. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.